which is in answer. So this is a very interesting phenomenon we're going to encounter here, because we'll see. But there's really two distinct parts to this class, because there's taken as the answer to a question. It's about one thing, and taken as explained by Srila Prabhupada, it's about something else. So a lot of times there's a lot of meaning in these verses, and this way you can see sometimes how you find out about them, the different levels of meaning. Now text number 3 is an answer to a question, which Prabhupada summarizes. In the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 31, as how does the Lord play with his different energies? And that question is actually asked on text 28. I want to go over that text because there's also a little example in there which is useful to remember. Brahma says, please tell me philosophically all about them, that is to say, your energies. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. So this is asking about how the Lord deals with his energy, or the relationship between the Lord and his energies. And Prabhupada says in the purport to text 28, he says, he talks about the different demigods, and he says, all such agents and creative energies are emanations from the Lord, and as such there is nothing except the Lord, or the one supreme source of different diversities. So again, we revert to Achincha Beda Beda Tattva. And then he says, the exact example is the spider and the spider's web. The web is created by the spider, maintained by the spider, and then wound up again. And the spider is covered within the web. Right? So the web is like the material energies, emanate from the Lord. He sits on them, he plays with them, and then winds it up back into himself. So that's the example. So here's the example of God as a spider. There was a famous movie by Ingmar Bergman where a woman goes crazy and she says, God is a spider. Yeah, that's right. There's some existential despair or something, but she was lifted off by a helicopter to the tune of a box on a company cello concerto. Very effective. But anyway... really did in my days watch art movies. But here's the example of the spider. Actually, he is like a spider in this sense that that's given. So in one sense, the spider and the web are one thing, and kind of detached like the material energy, just as we saw that the sun is there, and the darkness and the reflected light it produces is also detached a little bit, but at the same time, it's part of the sun. So in this way, similarly, the spider a little detached from its web, but at the same time comes out of himself and comes back into himself. So then if we look, we turn to Chaitanya Charitamrita, at the end of the purport to text 56, here Prabhupada summarizes what the four verses say. I meant to point it out to you earlier, but I forgot. You hadn't run across it yet. There's a summary of the four verses here at the end of the purport to the last of them in Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is page 58. So, the third of the verses, which is 55, now Prabhupada's summary of that verse is given here, right? The next verse instructs that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable energies, is simultaneously one with and different from the living entities and the material energy. This knowledge is called Achincha Beda Abeda Tattva. So that's the summary of that verse. So if we look at the verse, I guess we can look at Chaitanya Charitamrita first. That's what it looks like. It says, huh? Chaitanya Charitamrita, text 55. Yatha mahanti bhutani bhute shuch chavacheshvani patishtani apatishtani tatateshu nateshvani. As the material elements enter the bodies of all living beings, and yet remain outside of them all, I exist within all material creations, and yet am not within them. And I think in the Bhagavatam, it's pretty much similar. Let's see. O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time, I am outside of everything. So here's another example, which as Prabhupada explains it is very simple. Inside of our bodies, there's earth, air, fire, water, ether. And outside the cosmos, also those energies are there. Earth, air, fire, water, ether. In a different state, or shells of the universe, you can take it different ways. So they're outside and inside. So the Lord is present outside the creation in His fullness and inside in the form of His energies. This is the explanation of Achincha Beda Beda Tattva. That's the very simple thing. And in the Bhagavatam purport to this verse, in the first paragraph, Prabhupada explains it that way. The elements were created first, and therefore they enter into the bodily construction later. But in both circumstances, they entered the cosmos and also did not enter. Similarly, the Supreme Lord, by His different energies, namely the internal and external, is within everything in the manifested cosmos, and at the same time, He is outside of everything, situated in the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha Loka, as described before. But then, when he begins to explain further, he switches a little bit from talking about the expansion of his external potency to his entering every atom of the creation as the supersoul through the internal potency. So in his purport, really Prabhupada dwells upon this, how he is within every atom as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and simultaneously outside of everything. And of course, here's the situation of the Lord. Where is the Lord situated? He is within everything, and yet again, He is outside of everything. Sadaputta uses this to explain to us the real nature of the spatial configuration of reality. That everything is within Krishna. Krishna contains absolutely everything is inside of Him. Yet He enters in His fullness into every atom. In His fullness. That means Krishna in His fullness is within every atom. Within Krishna, within every atom, there's everything. So every atom contains absolutely everything. And so on, and so on, and so on. That's the way it is. That's what follows. So anyway, he wants to talk about, here Prabhupada really wants to talk about, he just kind of mentions in the purport the relationship between Krishna and his energies, which, as far as I can understand, is the precise and proper application of Achincha Beda, Beda Tattva. That is, it describes the relationship between Krishna and his energies. Now, between Krishna and the other Vishnu Tattvas, there's oneness. And you have to say there's some different, but they're none different from each other. Like Krishna and Balaram are none different from each other in a different way. from which, say, Krishna and a jiva are none different, or Krishna and earth or water or fire or air are none different. So far as I can understand, at this point in my development, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, strictly speaking, applies to Krishna and his energies, and not strictly speaking to Krishna and Vishnu Tattva expansion. This is what I was also told by Narayan Maharaj. Other devotees have other opinions. We'll have to check that out. But anyway, you don't have to worry about that so much, but you have to just understand that there's two topics here. One is Krishna and Krishna's energies. And here, what Prabhupada really wants to describe here as the mystery of devotional service is involving Krishna himself in his various forms. Now, and that's what he focuses on, the mystery of his of transcendental knowledge. Now, if we go back again, and here I'm going to switch to the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Can I ask a question about the Lord?
Yeah, go ahead.
In this comparison, the second part is easier for you to understand than the first part. How the elements do not enter the cosmos.
Hmm.
Or, as Prabhupada is saying in the Bhagavatam and so forth, the great elements of material creation, exists them, enter into the bodies of all manifested entities and exists them. At the same time, such elements are differently situated. They enter into the cosmos and at the same time they... How is it they don't enter
my, the cosmos? My understanding is not that the same elements that enter, but they remain outside. For example, as far as I can see, it's simple. You know, the coatings on the universe are made of the different elements. They don't enter into the bodies of the living beings. Bhutani here is translated as living beings. And then they remain outside in the shells of the universe. And also they're in the Mahatattva in an undifferentiated state.
That's in some portion.
Yeah, some portion.
Of the bodies,
yeah.
Of living entities.
Yeah, and some portion stays out there. Yeah, it's a simple, it's something, you know, inconceivable. Although what it's an example of is something inconceivable. So that what Brahman is saying is that even though the Lord enters the cosmos, he remains outside. We can see the material energy like that. Although what happens is with Krishna becomes inconceivable because he remains in his fullness outside. It's assumed, I suppose, that you know, when you take all the material elements and you take out the portion that enters in the cosmos, the universal pie is reduced. But when you're dealing with Krishna himself, the absolute truth, although so many slices come out, the pie remains unreduced. Yeah.
I understood that the elements that are within the body, they actually exist without being dependent on the body. In other words, they come into the body and they pass out of the body like water in a whirlpool. So that actually they're separately situated. They're not dependent upon the body.
Well, that could be true if you can show me where it says so. I thought about that. There's some way that they're both there and not there, but I haven't seen it anywhere. And I decided to take the simple route on this text. And just say some portion enters and most of it remains outside.
The body depends on the elements, but the elements don't depend on the
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a fact. That's a fact. But still, they enter into the cosmos and they form part of our bodies. So what this is talking about is staying outside and entering, not being permanent and temporary or independent and dependent. Anything more about the elements? Yeah.
Do we really talk about dualistic? Because it seems that everybody's thought about
it. Do we really talk about dualistic?
No, the entering or unentering the cosmos. Mm-hmm. Do we talk about a dualistic perception of interior and exterior according to our perception? What is exterior and interior according to our understanding of nature? I mean, cosmos doesn't necessarily have to be just one dimension. As we are understanding, there can be a multi-dimension.
Well,
that
there
wouldn't be
right.
Making sense to our understanding.
But well, we still say inside and outside.
Yes. Well, what do we mean?
We're talking about what we mean.
But inside and outside itself can mean a lot more things that actually inside of us. If I say...
There may mean lots of things, but you know very well you're inside the school building and past that window's outside. So let's just take it from there and keep going for the time being.
But in that situation, you can understand how come Bhumandala...
Don't worry, that's another class, right? Okay.
I envision in your pie example, if you use smaller pieces of pie within the pie, you could designate pieces until it would be pie and completely. Instead of cut a piece out of the perimeter, if you say the circular pieces of the pie and designate it, then it would be like the body within the material world.
Well, somebody could, this is the example to explain something else. And I don't really want to get too hung up on the example. So if somebody knows some way that simultaneously the very same elements that are within are at the same time without, if there's some sense of that's in here, I'll accept that. Prabhupada doesn't explain that in the purport. And I've become a little wary of being what's called overly intelligent, but it could be. And if you find somewhere else, that that's the case, I'll be happy to accept it. But as it stands now, Prabhupada doesn't explain it as he explained it, as I see, but in both cases, in a real simple way. Well, anyway, I want to get on to the mystery here. This is not mysterious. Really hard sometimes, when the example that is supposed to clarify something becomes harder to understand.
He says these elements exist both within and beyond the body.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the simplest way to deal with it, at least for the time being. Mm-hmm. Now, let's turn to this Chaitanya Charitamrita version of this. It was purports, and I want to look at... So let's look at text 51, which is on page 49. And here we have this word, paramam grujam, extremely confidential. And this is what Prabhupada means by mystery. He starts using this word, the scientific but full of mysteries. 51, did I say 49?
Page 49.
Page 49, text 51. Just go for text 51. But full of mysteries. And so then in the purports of text 52, the word mystery appears a lot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different times in one paragraph. The transcendental personal forms of the Lord are a mystery, and also are the symptoms of these forms, which are absolutely different from anything made of mundane elements, are also mysterious. Quality, the colors, the activities of the Lord. These and innumerable other are uncommon acts and attributes are all mysteries, one aspect of which is presented in the Bhagavad Gita. The truth of these mysteries was revealed to Brahma in a descending process. And so on. We cannot discover the mysteries of the Lord by our mundane endeavors. They are only revealed by His grace to the proper devotees. That's the other thing about if Krishna doesn't disclose Himself, you'll never know. You can prove logically that there's a God. I think I could even prove logically. I could make an argument, but I'm fine convincing anyway. But the absolute truth is a person. Based on logic and reason. But there's no way by logic and reason I could prove that person is Krishna. That he wears a peacock feather. Why a peacock feather? Why blue? Why the Loka Vrindavan? Why not Charleston, South Carolina? These are all very specific concrete things. It could be any kind of a bird, could be any color. And people say, why is Krishna blue? And the only thing is that that's what he wants to be. You know, because they want this, because as soon as they want a reason, they want you to explain, well, it's symbolizing this or that. It does. It's what it is. But it's not a necessary feature. You know, like all powerful. God has to be all powerful, but he can be any color he wants. Wear any kind of feather. Date any girls. You know, this is all. You know, his name, his address, all this stuff has to be disclosed. What he does has to be. That's the only way you can find out. If he says, "Come on in, I'll show you," then you can see it. If he shuts us out, then we'll never know. Right? So Prabhupada said, these mysteries are gradually disclosed. Notice order of exceedingly more confidential, esoteric, if you like. Are gradually disclosed to the various grades of devotees in proportion to the gradual development of their service attitude. And then he says that impersonalists who just speculate without submission and service, he says, and so on, cannot penetrate to the mysterious, there's the word again, region of transcendence, where the supreme truth is a transcendental person free from all tinges of the material elements. You see, because you'll never figure out, well, Krishna is blue. Right? And then we say, well, what kind of is blue? Absolutely different from the blue of this material world. He says, well, how can we use this word blue for what Krishna is and what, you know, Vrsut's chatter there? How can we use the same blue? Well, we do so on scriptural authorization. It says that's the word to use, blue. But it's different from this blue? Oh, yes. Different. Absolutely different from this blue. Well, now I'm stuck. How do I know? What is this transcendental blue? I have to see it. What is a spiritual body? Because to the impersonalist, they right away, they come, you know, that God has no form. Why is that? Because to them, by definition, form means material form. You see, every form you see is made out of matter, right? Form means material form. And if you say spiritual form, that's a contradiction in terms. If it's spiritual, it's formless. So we say it's a spiritual form. Well, what's that like? How is it different from material form? We say, well, it's not made out of earth, air, fire, water either. What's it made out of? Concentrated Brahman. But that doesn't make it, you know, you get... Anyway, so it has to be. It has to, so... And you know these things by revelation. I say, Krishna lets you know. Like he lets Brahman know here. So here, that's the discussion of what Prabhupada says about mystery. And when we turn to the explanation of this verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Well, by the way, I want to point out again in the Chaitanya Charitamrita purport, he also mentions Super Soul here as being the how he enters. Prabhupada says his existence, that is the super soul, can be realized by one who has the single qualification of submissiveness, and who thereby becomes a surrendered soul. The development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization. I'm reading from the, instead of going to Bhagavatam, I went to the text 55 in Adi Lila. This is a really great... His existence, that is of super soul, can be realized by one who has the single qualification of submissiveness and who thereby becomes a surrendered soul. The development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization. This is our Vijnana. By which one can ultimately meet the Supreme Lord in person as a man meets another man face to face. So this is what we deal with here. This is what Prabhupada deals with most of all in this purport in Srimad Bhagavatam. So he talks about how the Lord expands himself as Anga Tarasta Paramanu Chayantayastam in every atom of the universe as the Supersoul. So in the third paragraph on page 193 of the purport to text 35, so he says, the impersonalist cannot imagine that he is all-pervasive in this way as the Supersoul. They conclude because he is all-pervading that there is no possibility of his spiritual form, personal form. So Prabhupada says, herein lies the mystery of transcendental knowledge, of his transcendental knowledge, that is, knowledge of Krishna. This mystery is transcendental love of God. Love of Godhead. And one who is surcharged with such transcendental love of Godhead can without difficulty see the personality of Godhead in every atom and every movable or immovable object. So he's seen, Supersoul is seen everywhere in the external world around us. So that's part of it. Next part, at the same time, he can see the personality of Godhead in his own abode, Goloka. So that's outside. Here's inside the universe, as he enters within the universe. So the devotee whose eyes are open can see Krishna at every moment within everything moving and immoving. And simultaneously, locally he sees it, simultaneously, he says, can see the personality of Godhead in his own abode, Goloka, enjoying eternal pastimes with his eternal associates, who are also expansions of his transcendental existence. This vision is the real mystery of spiritual knowledge, as stated by the Lord in the beginning. This mystery is the most confidential part of the knowledge of the Supreme, and it is impossible for the mental speculator to discover by dint of intellectual gymnastics. The mystery can be revealed only through the process recommended by Brahmaji and the Brahma Samhita, Premanjana, Purusha, Bhakti, Balo, Chanina, and so on.
Where's that in the beginning?
That's one of the prelude verse. Which one?
31.
Yeah, 31 here, this one. Sarahasyam. With by devotional service and all its necessary angas, limbs. And that's what he's talking about. So that's back to that. That's the verse that mentions this paramam guha. So it's to see the Lord simultaneously, as being conducting within the universe under his direction as a super soul. And also in Goloka, Vrindavan. And understanding that they're the same, one and the same, supreme personality of Godhead. So a pure devotee is surrounded by Krishna, inside and outside. Let me just finish this, then we'll get to this. Because he goes on, he gets a little deeper into this. Next paragraph, 4. Therefore, although he is present in every atom, the Supreme Personality of Godhead may not be visible to the dry speculators. They can't see what's there. But still the mystery is unfolded before the eyes of the pure devotees because their eyes are anointed with love of God. Premanjana Sarita Bhakti Balotsinena. Their eyes are smeared with the ointment or the unguent of prema. And this love of Godhead can be attained only by the practice of transcendental loving service to the Lord and nothing else. The vision of the devotees is not ordinary. It is purified by the process of devotional service. In other words, as the universal elements are both within and without, okay, back to our example, similarly, the Lord's name, form, qualities, pastimes, entourage, etc., as they are described in the revealed scriptures, or as performed in the Vaikuntha Lokas, far, far beyond the material cosmic manifestation, are factually being televised in the heart of the devotee. The man with a poor fund of knowledge cannot understand, although by material science one can see things far away by means of television. Factually, the spiritually developed person is able to have. When one becomes a devotee of Krishna, Krishna is in his heart, not forehand and super soul. He doesn't just speak forehand and super soul, but here what this is actually, he says here, the pastimes of the Lord, say the Vrindavan pastimes of the Lord, as they're described in the scriptures, or as they're going on right now, he sees them. So this is they're always going on, and he sees them and actually participates in them also. This is interactive television. Participates in the pastimes. So although Goloka Vrindavan is very far away, outside the creation, it also enters into the creation by being broadcast in the hearts of the pure devotees. So this is the most esoteric meaning of this text. You see, so Prabhupada takes us from he's outside as the Supreme Lord and within through the extension of his energies, through Chinsha Beta Beta Tattva. Then he's within as the super soul within the atom. And the devotee sees the super soul outside in everything and sees the Lord far, far away. But how does he see him? Through this television in his heart. So in that sense, even the Lord in Goloka Vrindavan is locally manifest through the medium of the devotee's heart. On the spiritual cathode ray tube. Better, Lotus is better. He said television. But you can understand that. Yeah.
He's seeing Krishna in his heart, but he sees Krishna in the atom, or is it by entering?
No,
see the form of God.
Well, I don't know actually about seeing the atoms, but he sees it.
In every heart.
Yeah, that's what he said. That's what he said. I just take it like it says.
I thought that was explained by him.
No.
Another way in
the mystery of transcendental love. Without difficulty, see the personality of Godhead in every atom or every movable or immovable object. Now, there's two different ways that Krishna can be seen externally. One can simply see how Krishna is controlling everything. It's like a vision of the universal form. Because the universal form is a superficial or external feature of the super soul. Now the devotee is, by his own submissiveness, has a direct link with the super soul. Prabhupada says somewhere he's receiving messages. Where is that? Receiving messages from Vaikuntha. Well, that's not him. Who knows who they're receiving messages from?
Yeah.
But somewhere in there he mentions messages. Oh yeah, that's right. Okay, this is how Prabhupada does it here. In text 55. Because of his development of transcendental attachment for the Supreme Lord, A surrendered soul feels the presence of his beloved everywhere, and his senses are engaged. So then he mentions that what he's seeing is Radha Krishna on the decorated throne beneath the desire tree. You know that verse. Nose and smelling the aroma from the lotus feet of the Lord. His ears are engaged in hearing messages from Vaikuntha, and his hands embrace the lotus feet of the Lord and his associates. Thus the Lord is manifest to a pure devotee from within and without. This is one of the mysteries of the devotional relationship, which a devotee and the Lord are bound by ties of spontaneous love. So on.
Is that the example of the child's truth, the mother's love is devote?
Both. But here's also direct face-to-face seeing the Lord.
In the end.
Yeah, Krishna wants.
Yeah. And when he walks, called the sacred spiritual thing to my foot, and my devotee has qualified. The problem is that he feels the devotee to Krishna.
Okay. Just take it like it says.
In relation to this question of love, you know, statement, how is this mukha of eternal form of Krishna different from mukha we can observe in the real world? So I was wondering, how can we relate it to practice of life?
It's not our business to speculate about these matters. The point is, you see, is that we're using this word blue. On the authority of Shastra. And what the word blue means is what it is in Krishna Loka. That's blue. By some authorized extension, we also apply it to the color of his chadar, his hat, and so on. You know. So this is what, because people say, you know, do you take it literally, that Krishna's blue? And we say, yes, we do. But the literal meaning is what applies to Krishna. Right now, when we use that word, we've got a kind of confused, imprecise analogy of something like this. So we just have to say that we take it literally, but until our vision is completely purified, we don't quite know what it means. But its usage is authorized, because it's scriptural language. It comes down. It's not that we made it up. It comes down. So we use this language. Chayamam Tribhunga, that's given to us. By Brahma, who saw it. And that's what he said. He said blue. He said blue. That's our authority. Otherwise, we wouldn't know anything if it hadn't been passed down like this. And then, when there's sufficient proportional development of spiritual vision, according to our surrender, then we can understand what that blue is. So it's not our business to sit down and try to figure it out. You know, because you'll never do that. We're not mental speculators. We're devotees. We figure it out by surrendering. That's our figuring out process. Not by, you know, spinning our wheels over time.
In the way that a conditioned soul sees it?
No, not of course. The conditioned soul sees the external energy as moving on its own, independently of Krishna. Prabhupada said this. He said, don't see a tree. See Krishna.
I don't mean exactly in the same way, but with such a person have access to that outlook for the sake of speaking with them.
Access to what outlook?
Just, in other words, be able to relate to, in some way, that mundane perception or not.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. But what Prabhupada said is when one becomes fully surrendered, he says that Krishna takes charge of his senses. So the devotee really doesn't, you know, how his body moves, how he goes, what he sees, what he doesn't see. That's really, you know, Krishna's just running it for him. He doesn't have to worry about it. So he can either be involved with the so-called material energy for Krishna's service, or not. for Krishna service. Depends on where his assignment is, whether it's in Vrindavan or whether it's in Cleveland. And it doesn't make any difference. Same place, as you can see from this verse, as far as he's concerned. Because Krishna is the only reality. And the devotee, Krishna conscious means to be conscious of Krishna, the only reality, at every step. Not only is it remembering that everything is connected to Krishna, it's seeing everything connected to Krishna. It's living by seeing everything connected to Krishna. But now we have a little disconnected vision because we have other interests in the service of Krishna. As soon as we get over that little hump, then we'll be okay. Small, it is a small thing, actually. Because when we do finally surrender to Krishna, we say, my God, you know, I was held back for this little thing. You know, we made a mountain out of a molehill. Yes, yes.
Yeah, this is a Bengali verse which explains the vision of the Uttama I saw it. It goes like this. Savara Sangama Deki Na Deki Paramoshi. That Savatra Hoi Nisha Nisha Deki. Things which are movable or unmovable, he doesn't just see their form, but rather he sees the worshipable morality within that.
Mm-hmm. You see, yeah, that's right. Krishna is right now in the material world, he's the background. So sometimes he's the inferred background, or the implied background, or the accepted background. And in the foreground, we see all the material elements moving around. As we become more Krishna conscious, what's now the background becomes the foreground. See, and Krishna comes out, as it were, from behind the scenery. He's not really behind the scenery, but that's how it appears to us. And manifests himself. So what is seen, the Prabhupada says, don't see a tree, see Krishna. It means like that. It's not that the tree is seen and
reality
for what it is.
At the same time, I vaguely remember some conversation and the result of the conclusion of the vision wasn't that, you know, he just sees all these little paramatmas floating in the air all the time. Otherwise, he wouldn't be able to see anything anyway.
Let me ask you a question. How many paramatmas are there?
Just one.
That's right. And that one's here, and that one's there. So the one paramatma is seen everywhere. So it's not exactly like, you know, that's true.
So what you were saying was what I was.
Oh, I see. That's what you're asking about. Okay. Yeah. No, it's not like you got microscopes instead of eyes. You know. Mark, do you have
a... I was just going to ask if it's proper to Prabhupada is the director of the Don't See Trees. Is it proper to kind of artificially force that vision?
No, don't try to imagine that the tree is Krishna, because that's not exactly what it means either. But it's just try to understand, first of all, it's like a chincha beta beta tattva. What is this tree composed of? You can just start by meditating on this tree in its entire context. There's the material energy, there's the spirit soul. These are two energies of Krishna. This soul is in a particular condition of treeness, embodied in a certain way. So that's one way. And then behind that, and then there's Super Soul who's controlling all of this. Then also, there's a kind of sort of metaphorical way that the trees are the hairs on the body of the Lord. That's another way. So the universal form. If we like to see trees, then we can always think of them as the hairs in the body of the Lord. That's another. The rivers are his veins, the mountains are his bones, and so on. This way one becomes accustomed. By meditating in this way on the universal form, one becomes accustomed to gathering together all the variety of sense objects and seeing them as part of Krishna. Immediately that begins to destroy the enjoying attitude. This tree is something I can just chop up at my whim, or get out of the way, or enjoy. It belongs to Krishna. You begin to see the proprietorship and the all-pervasiveness of Krishna. So start that way, and then the more we just understand and they're going Hare Krishna, we can see that Krishna is there. And it will develop naturally in proportion to our surrender. If we try to force it by some mental thing without the concomitant effort of surrendering to Krishna, then you'll get something a little weird. So our process is the process of surrender, as Prabhupada emphasizes so much in these verses. Rama's process is not a process of mental speculation. It's a process of submission and surrender. And our process has to be the same way, attain the same vision as Brahma. Yeah, that's right. Well, Bhoma Vrindavan is there for less realized people, because it's easier to see Krishna. There's certain spiritual potency that's invested in that tract of land. If you go there in the right way, it's a tirtha, you know, it's a place of pilgrimage. You can access the spiritual world a little easier, a special potency. Of course, you can also be there and miss out altogether. You can be in Vrindavan, it can be another mundane place. Prabhupada said you can't go there by purchasing a railway ticket. So there's something more to it than that. But wherever one who is wrapped in Krishna consciousness, he sees it as Vrindavan. Look at Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted to go there very badly, but at the same time, he thought that's where he was, when he was really in Orissa. That's where he's discussing the difference between Goloka and Gokula.
Yeah. Right?
I think he's asking about the difference between Gokula and anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Well, that's wherever the devotees are. Then you can see, because Krishna is in every atom, Vrindavan is in every atom. But you've got to have the access code, which is surrender. Well, isn't this computer language wonderful? Really extends the range of metaphors.
On the same token, you mentioned earlier in your explanation of spiritual form, you call it concentrated Brahman, and I wanted enough you to elaborate on the term concentrated.
I just repeat that word is Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's word. I think it's in Brahma Samhita. The concentrated essence of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, and somewhere else he uses concentrated Brahman. Don't ask me the difference between dilute and concentrated. I can't explain it. I'm just repeating. Yes.
Is that important to understand? Essentially, let's say that doubt that he just said,
what
they
doubt?
Equally under something that is vividly personal and is present. Like it seems that most of the time we practice the wholesome service, we are dealing with a dualistic environment. We're dealing still on the perception of what we can see, things mm-hmm. we can touch, related to our physical identification.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's say he will doubt about idea, what is.
Who will
by
doubt?
In essence, Varanasi Prabhu over here. He will doubt, he will ask what is really the essence of Brahman. Concentrated Brahman.
Well, you just want to know what that expression
yes,
meant.
Yes, but what I mean, it is so important equally to understand and actually experience such a
that's how we can find out.
Like,
yeah.
Is it?
The only way we can find out is by getting the appropriate...
So what direction we would...
full surrender.
What would be the... Okay. One of them.
That's it. Prabhupada said it's single qualification is submissiveness. In other words, it's the sine qua non. You can't do it without that.
seem to be referred to, like explaining things.
You got a problem with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a problem with it at all. Thank you very much. But the point is, I have this one interaction over there. The explaining things, truths, these physical comprehensions, which are basically misconceptions.
What?
That we try to get rid of, right?
Yeah, we're trying to get rid of misconceptions.
That's right. But they are based on physical identification, much really physical identification.
Mm-hmm. All right, got you so far.
So if we will explain things, they deal with father spiritual consideration, truth these in misconceptions, then how we will really come up to the right conclusion?
You won't. That's why you have to give submissive oral reception for those coming into the disciplic succession.
So how would you qualify my state of mind questioning this thing? Right?
Questioning what this thing?
The questioning. I am questioning.
You can
something.
Question because you're trying to understand.
Okay, so what?
And I'm trying to explain. You have to surrender.
How would you qualify the area? What position would you qualify? That excessive or critical intelligence?
What position? Wait a minute. Go back. Back up.
Essence of mind will generate such observation which I will just ask you about. Why? Where would you qualify? Where would you put me? In what bucket would you put me over there?
I think he's saying something at this stage now. Am I being submissive?
Are you being submissive?
No.
You answer, you tell me.
If I am being submissive?
No.
Well, I'm trying to see things as they are. So therefore, I don't
How do you go about finding out how things are?
Well, I can't really see things because I see things according to my misconception.
Yeah. So how do you find out how things really are? Well, you go to someone who has no misconceptions.
No, you have a spiritual master. You know, I refer to him. You can actually tell you this short thing. This really refers to very much.
I think it's time.
This is for everybody, I think.
We'll go out. You can talk to me later. The bell rang. End of round.